Blog Talk Radio.
Time Sports Show coming to you live from the greatest city on the planet, Durham, North Carolina, on this, the 12th day of September 2016. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the football season is here. The NFL is kicked off. College football kicked off earlier, like last week. NFL getting their start on Thursday night. Did you see Superman get his cape knocked off? Cam Newton declared himself Superman. Cam Newton declared himself the greatest football player on the planet. Cam Newton said, "I have changed the way football is being played at the quarterback position." On Thursday night, he passed Steve Young for passes and throwing touchdowns and everything else. Now, the only difference is, Cam, I want you to listen to this. If you can hear me, if those concussion protocols have been followed, if you can hear me, I want you to understand this. Steve Young got rings. All you got is a dance and a headache. That's all you got, brother. So Superman got his cape knocked off. Everybody screaming and yelling about, "They did Cam wrong. They did Cam wrong." How can you hurt Superman? Then we have the protest going on now. It's interesting. Tom Brady, during the preseason game, because he can't play now because he got caught cheating. But Tom Brady took all the NFL stuff off of his helmets, which is a uniform violation. And no one said anything about Tom Brady's protest. But if you have black athletes who protest and go down on the knee because of the national anthem, the words of the national anthem don't ring true, just like the words of the Pledge of Allegiance, and people know it don't, but they just got to defend old Dixie, but they know it doesn't. But it's interesting. If a white athlete protests something, it is his God-given right under this nation's flag to do what he wants to. But if a black athlete does it, they always say, "Then why don't you just leave?" Just something to think about. Anyway, tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we have a special guest, and it's head women's basketball coach Jessica Kern, and she is the head coach at Mississippi Valley State University. Good evening, Coach. How are you doing?
I am great, trying to stay cool. How are you?
I can understand it. It is absolutely hot enough to cook an egg on the sidewalk up here, waiting for some rain to come through and cool things off. And also, I forgot to mention Linda Van Smith, also co-hosting tonight on the Overtime Sports Show. I don't know how I forgot that, but I was so incensed. I think I was just taken aback by Superman hitting the ground the other night and not getting up. I've never seen Superman knocked down. But anyway, we'll go to that later. As you can tell, I'm really not a Cam Newton fan. But anyway, let's talk about your basketball team, Coach. But let's talk about you first. Let's talk about the road travel to get you to Mississippi Valley State. Tell us about your background and what led you there.
Well, first and foremost, thank you to you, Linda. Good evening. I appreciate
evening.
You guys greatly for having me on. You know, I'll start with everything that I say on every single press conference that I do. Just a little girl from Milwaukee who had a dream. And I'm so grateful and so blessed in the time that I've been able to be in collegiate athletics to be successful at everywhere that I've gone. So I'm originally from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. From there, I went on to Penn State University. And like I tell people, you know, I don't claim to be anything other than I was. And I was a track and field athlete at Penn State University, and I did not play collegiate basketball. And prior to receiving my undergraduate degree at Penn State University, I ended up becoming a professional basketball player, which is really funny. But, you know, hey, I was one of those kids that was extremely gifted to be able to be great at one thing. And, you know, it led me to the call for the ball once that was done and over with. And so my family is originally from Germany, and I was able to have a 7-year European pro playing career. And I started my collegiate coaching career at Arkansas Pine Bluff. And 12 years later, I went from Arkansas Pine Bluff to the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, got my first head coaching job at a Division II institution in the CIAA, Lincoln University, where we did some great things there. Left there, went to coach with Coach Jackie Carson at Furman University, who was a wonderful lady. And that experience led me here to be the first female head coach at Mississippi Valley State University. I'm so grateful to be here.
And, you know, it's really interesting you said it because I broadcast for North Carolina Central University, and we played at our place last year. And the one thing I had to say, out of all the coaching staffs I've ever been around, I have to say, y'all have the tallest – well, you used to at Furman have the tallest coaching staff I've ever seen. I'm standing there on the sidelines, and all I am – I come up to you ladies' elbows. That was it. I mean, it was unreal.
Well, I'm pretty sure those foreign heels didn't help either. So,
I was just laughing my tail off because I'm sitting here saying, for the first time, I am intimidated like crap. Let me get out of the way. They're going to kill me. So, I got out of the way. It was great.
Let me ask you this.
Coach
Carson sets the bar when it comes to fashion and when it comes to heels. So, I had to make sure I set my game up.
You sure did. Well, now, not being, you know, your track background, coming into, you know, basketball, playing professionally, all that stuff, what, from the track point of view, are, you know, it's like those two sports are, you know, like night and day to a certain degree.
Right.
But winning is winning no matter what you do. A victory is a victory. But what are some of the lessons you bought from track and field into the world of basketball that helped you be as successful as you are?
Well, you know, I know the one thing I think that reigns true in everything that we do is physically being fit. And my background was strength and conditioning. And earlier in my career, I got certified to do so. And I knew that whenever I was blessed enough to get into the head seat, that I would want my team to be an up-tempo team because those are the types of play that I wanted to mimic. And so I was highly recruited out of high school to play basketball as well, and it was the decision of myself and my family to commit to running track and field, and I had a great career. I was all Big Ten while I was at Penn State University, and I don't regret it for a minute, but at the time, I had some great mentors, and, you know, again, you tell people, you know, never burn bridges, and I said, look, when I get out of my collegiate experience, I'm really ready to commit myself to basketball. Now, I come from a long line of coaches. My father was a state-winning basketball coach in the state of Wisconsin for over 30 years. And so I really didn't have much of a choice when it came to basketball. And so the one thing that my teams have always been that I think set us apart from other teams and the reason we've been able to push ourselves into postseason play is that being in shape beginning to end and running is what we do. And so I make sure when we're recruiting with the young ladies, I said, you know, preseason, get you ready for the court and you should be able to play all 40 minutes. And so that's how the two correlate, actually. We take that push, pull, or drag, be bigger, faster, and stronger, and we correlate it to what we do on the court. So everything we do is extremely dynamic, but focusing on an up-tempo style of play on both ends of the court. So I think that is what's going to set us apart a little bit in this conference, that we'll be disciplined on both ends, but we're looking to be up-tempo.
And that's one thing I was going to ask you about the SWAC. Is the SWAC more of a – I know, like, if you look at the MEAC, they're more of a – they're like a hybrid conference. I mean, they love power and they love finesse. And sometimes, you know, it's hard to put those two things together. Now,
is
the SWAC more of a finesse conference or more of a power conference? Let's bring it on, more defensive-minded.
Right. Oh, hands down. Hands down, the SWAC is a rough, you got to be able to take a hit kind of conference, very guard-oriented. And very up-tempo. And so I think we did a very good job. My hats go off to my staff, Coach Ronnie Enoch, Lenny Stallings, and my graduate assistant, Renee Dancer. They all came in and did a phenomenal job of hitting the ground running. Coach Enoch has CIAA experience as well as MEAC experience, one of the top recruiters in the game. We're so lucky to have him here. And so we got a very good combination in a very small amount of time of kids that can run, kids that can shoot, and kids that can take a hit. And so having a plethora of kids from newbies to fifth-year transfers to JUCO kids and some returners, I think we got a good combination to make an impact early in this conference.
You know, I joke with the young ladies sometimes when I'm down on the floor and they're warming up, and I'll look at the other team when they run on the floor, and I'll just look at them and say, ladies, get your mouthpieces tonight. It's going to be one of those type of games, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, protect all soft spots because you're going to get hit. And I think that Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's just the way the game is played these days. I mean, women's basketball has gotten more physical than I think I've ever seen it. Last year, I mean, I saw some plays that, you know, young ladies driving into the basket, and then you hear this tremendous thud as they get decked. And it's just part of the game that you're going to have to adapt to. And I think that's where a lot of them, from coming from high school to college, see, in high school they're a little more, you know, referees are a little more, if you touch them, they blow the whistle a little more. I like to call it the touchy-feely type thing. But in college, unless a bone comes through, they're not going to call everything. You're just not going to get it. So, you know, you just have to learn to play, like you said, with that physical toughness and that mental toughness that it takes to play the game these days. And let me ask you, I ask every coach that comes on, I love women's basketball because it's still the only pure type of basketball left, because you have to fundamentally be sound in what you do. But the NCAA seems to like to experiment on women's basketball. Drives me crazy. Let's try it with the women, from which women, and we'll do it with the men. So why don't you try some with the men and then see if it works, and then we'll give it to the women. But anyway, breaking it down now into 4 10-minute quarters instead of, you know, 20-20. How has that affected the game, and do you particularly like that? Do you think it's helped or hurt the game?
Well, you know, I will say this. The women's game is consistently evolving. Again, you're finding young ladies, you know, to see a dunk in a game is not a rarity anymore. You know, right. To see a young woman have a breakout game from behind the arc, this isn't a rarity anymore. And so I think the NCAA Rules Committee is doing what they can to keep up with the growth of the female student athlete. You know, I know these last rule changes was a shock to every coach. And, you know, you had to make adjustments. But overall, any rules that have been made, the overall intent is to make a higher scoring game on the women's side. And so even though that is the intent, you know, you're going to win some and you're going to lose some in regards to whether it's helping or hindering your team. With these past rules that were in place, if you weren't in shape, it was definitely going to show. It was definitely going to show, because you had to definitely utilize your timeouts accordingly, a lot more efficient than you had to be in the past. Especially with, you know, at the line, you had to make sure that your kids were a little more efficient with shooting. And as a coach, again, your game plan had to be adjusted a bit. And even I know personally for us in preseason practices, you know, doing a lot more mock situations. Because, you know, kids, when this rule change comes, you've gone through your entire high school experience relying on one set of rules. And then collegially, not only do you have to get used to preseason, the regimen of study hall, eating, nutrition, sleep, but then you're also adjusting to new rules. And so I know as head coaches, especially at the Division I level, with rule years coming up, we've definitely been extremely vocal about what we think it takes. Yes, we do want more butts in seats. Yes, we want this to be a more high-scoring game. But yes, we also want to keep our student-athletes safe and do what's best for them. And so I think the NCAA is doing their absolute best to find the happy balance. And I do anticipate seeing some more rules, you know, come into play here within the next few rule years that are coming up on us.
Yeah, I do too. One thing I'm noticing, I don't know if you know, I know you have though, being a coach, but one thing that's coming into the ladies' game that I hadn't seen in a while is, if you notice, they're doing a whole lot more hand checking now. The stronger that the athletes get, the more they're realizing, well, wait a minute now, I can push her a little bit off her, you know, if I can just make her move an inch off of her spot, then that's going to mentally affect her, and plus the physical, you know, my presence there also is going to affect her shot or, you know, her game or whatever. And I'm seeing a lot more hand-checking. Now, is there a rule in place in ladies basketball for that type of thing? I know it's got to be a foul, but do you think it's something that needs to be, you know, closely monitored if it is getting to be a problem?
I think so. I think it's something actually that, again, the Rules Infractions Committee is doing their absolute best to monitor it. The issue that we have, again, in any sport is consistency. This year, you know, watching the Olympics, you saw massively different types of play from one portion of the world to another. Some leagues let you play through it. I played my last 2 years in Australia, and I'm trying to tell you, you had to play through anything and everything in order to get a foul. Some conferences are a little more lenient, And then there's other conferences that, you know, you breathe on somebody and it's a foul. So, you know, it makes it a little challenging as a coach to try to get your kids prepared to play in any situation. But to be very honest with you, the same thing I tell my kids at all five positions. So you show your hands, show your numbers. You'll never go wrong. So at this point, that's what we're going to have to teach. We're going to have to teach it. You know, and unfortunately in women's basketball, it's a fun game to watch because, again, we have to be more fundamentally sound where overall athletic ability might not be cohesive across the board. And so as coaches, we have to do a more diligent job at making sure we coach a clean game and we teach a clean game because the rules are evolving and they're going to continue to do so.
Linda, you got some questions?
I do. Good evening, Coach Kern, and welcome to the Overtime Sports Show.
Thank you.
My first question to you is, I wanted to ask you about your up-tempo style, but you did answer that. You said bigger, faster, and stronger. That is your up-tempo motto?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And so do you think you'll continue to do that for the upcoming season?
I do. I think you're seeing a lot more career-ending injuries in our women's game. And, you know, you have to find the balance between making your kids strong and keeping them safe. And so that's why I take my strength and conditioning background and I make sure that we put that into our equation of success here to keep the young ladies healthy. And so not only are we looking to keep them strong, especially keep them having a strong core, we're looking to make them faster, and we're making everything that we do just a little bit bigger so that we can be efficient. So, for example, working very intentionally with my post players. It's a dirty game down there in the post. And making sure that they're setting legal screens, making sure that they're blocking out cleanly. So everything that we do is putting you in a position, number one, to be safe, and number two, to be efficient. And so I think by teaching an up-tempo and teaching the fundamentals, we'll find a good balance on both ends of the floor.
Okay. Now, how do you support your community involvement? And what are your athletes or going to be involved in?
Right. Well, you know, when I got hired here, I don't think as a coach you can claim to be successful without the assistance of the immediate community surrounding you. This is a very small area in which we're in here in the Delta, but the great part is you have very intimate settings when it comes to your fans. For example, for us, our education day will be on November 17th, and that will be against Tougaloo College here at home, and every school basically between K-5 and grade 5 in the surrounding area has been invited into our brand new complex here, the Harrison complex. That ribbon cutting was on Saturday. I'm so excited to get all those young people in here. Now, mind you, I know they'll not even know who they're cheering for probably at one point. It'll just be loud for no reason. But again, this community deserves, and I said that when I got hired, there is a plethora of recruiting right here in our back door. And I've been very intentional about being relational with the alumni chapters, with the surrounding schools in regards to recruitment, anywhere from law enforcement that supports and keeps our students and our student athletes safe in this area. It's very important that we bridge that gap. And so we will be doing a lot of community engagement. We have a reading program where our kids will go out and read to some of the local schools. We will be partnering with our men's basketball program and getting kids out and registered to vote.
Oh.
You'd be surprised of how many students are not registered to vote.
Fantastic.
And with country's livelihood in the balance here very soon, we want to make sure that we're visual.
Exactly.
Because I tell you, I just took a trip to Germany a week ago. My family's originally from Germany, and it was twofold, work and recruitment. And when you listen to other countries and the image in which they have of us, it's extremely important that we are promoting getting out to vote. And so that's one thing that we're going to do as well. And then we're also, as we do here at the institution, promoting healthy living through blood drives, nutrition, and other initiatives that the institution will be implementing this year. Childhood obesity is huge, and especially amongst our population. And what better people to be a vessel than those in athletics who nutrition and healthy living is what we do and have to do to be successful to promote a healthy style of living. So these are some of the things that we're interested in doing this year. I'm excited to get out. As I told my athletic director and President Bynum, I'm excited to be a face of the institution, to promote the institution. And so I think bigger and better things are here to come for Mississippi Valley State.
Yeah, sounds like you have a lot of things, good things going on. And I like what you said about the childhood obesity. That's very important because, you know, being a middle school teacher, you see some children that are obese and it lowers their self-esteem. And a lot of times you look and they don't have a lot of friends, you know, and it's something that, you know, they need to work on. Maybe families need to work on that. So I think that's great that you're talking about that. So what do you plan
for?
You
know, we had a book bag drive here recently in our local communities here, one in Greenwood, one in Itabena. If it didn't resonate to me, I got into this business for women helping women. It's very simple, nothing more, nothing less. And I saw many young girls who did not have, young girls who, it was very obvious they needed guidance. And
yeah.
So I came back and I made sure that this is something that women's basketball is going to have to intimately have their hands on. And making sure, just not through camps and clinics, but that when we get out in the community and if we're getting educated, especially about healthy living and what it takes to get to this level if you want to be a student athlete, that we can also be a voice that the areas surrounding us can use and educate them as well. So I think it's extremely important. I would agree with you on that.
Yeah, and I think, too, a lot of students like athletes, and they would listen to what athletes have to say, you know, about nutrition and being fit and all that. So,
right. That,
you know, that's a good thing. To another, one more question. What are your plans for
improvement
as a coach for this year?
You know, when making the adjustment, you know, from going from being assistant back to a head, you have to stay true to your vision. And, again, that goes back to talking about embracing the communities that surround us. And a smaller community like this, you know, people are looking forward to getting out to a game. These are loyal fans. These are alumni. You know, we're relatively young as an institution at 60-plus years. And so you've got alumni of all ages that, again, are relatively young, looking to come back and are very proud of their institution. And so I want to make sure I embrace the communities that surround us. Our athletic director, Diantha Ford, she is doing a phenomenal job of promoting this school, promoting a culture of winning both on and off the court, and expecting excellence. And I definitely want to be a vessel to be seamless in continuing that mission of overall excellence. But one thing I know I'm going to have to work on, and we discussed just a little bit prior to this interview, is when you're taking over a program, which I have done at the Division II level, and we were extremely successful in four seasons, it is changing an overall mindset and mentality. And so I tell my young ladies, you know, a disciplined woman is a free woman. And so although they think I'm picky, although they think, Jesus, coach, you know, we're, you know, scheduled down to the minute, it's all because it's setting us up for excellence. And what we expect is a daily walk of excellence through this campus as young women, and to do it with dignity and to do it with respect. So I'm going to hold myself accountable. One thing I want to work on is holding myself accountable to exactly what it is that I have said and the reason why I was brought here, and to make sure that these young ladies do it daily. And I do think that in this conference, staying disciplined in all that we do will couple over on the court, and that should show immediate improvement in success.
Back to you.
Yeah, you know, your coach, yeah, you're saying exactly what I've always said. It's what I call the championship pedigree. I mean, from getting up in the morning and getting to class on time, doing all your assignments, you do it as a champion. When you come and you go to the cafeteria and you know you have to eat properly, you eat properly, you do it as a champion. Everything you have is a championship mindset. And as you walk across that campus or as you go to the classroom, like when I was coaching high school ball, when you go to the classroom, you need to be that leader. You need to be that light that shines and everybody sees you got that special thing, because you got it basically going for you, because you know what it
That's
takes
right.
to get there. You know, a lot of high school students, and I know you found this in your recruitment, they go to high school, they go to class, mom and daddy fix their lunch, wipe their butt, drive them wherever they need to go, and they think the whole world is great. But once you hit Division One or Division Two, whatever. Once you get to college and find out that it's all on your back, you've got to get up and haul your butt across campus in the rain to class. I don't care if it's raining. You got to go to class. You got to do this. You've got to be to practice on time. You've got to practice the 2 hours it takes, give everything you got, and then go back and write 3 term papers. I'm sorry.
Right.
That's just the way it is. It's the life you chose.
Right.
And a lot of kids don't know how to adapt to that. A lot of them kind of burn out early, and it's all called prioritizing. And there are hundreds of people on campus, from especially at HBCUs, on campus, your professors, your advisors, your coaches, your mentors, heck, even a chaplain that can help you get those things in order to be successful, and they don't use a lot of the resources that they have. You're not in this alone. There are people who would absolutely just give their left arm to help you to make sure you're successful, because we all want to see our young people do well. And
exactly.
That's just the thing I keep trying to preach every day, every day. Well, coaches, we wind things up. Got one question for you. I know that there's coaches meetings. I know they're going to be coming up, or coaches conferences coming up, where they pick the predicted order of finish for, you know, each sport, whether it's basketball or football. But right now we're talking about basketball. And like I always used to say, when I would go in these meetings and they would ask me about where I think my team is going to finish, I would say, fellas, I know where we're going to finish. I'll let y'all worry about 2, 3, 4, and 5. Now, how do you see your team, you know, stacking up against the rest of the SWAC this season?
Well, I know we're extremely happy with what we were able to do in recruitment. And at the end of the day, you know, I'm a realist in knowing where we finished last year. And let's call a spade, people have a preconceived notion, and that's okay. It's fun being the underdog. Let's just say that. I've been there before, and that's the reason why I'm in this seat now. So I'm pretty excited. I'm very, very excited. And as my young ladies know, people can have their perception and expectations, but we have a higher expectation for ourselves, and that's all that matters. And so at the end of the day, I've got some great kids. Like I said, I've got a fifth-year transfer that came from ANC and Kenya Haley. A junior college point guard, and Lauren Elliott came from Lincoln Trail Community College in Michigan. She's from Detroit originally. I've got 2 kids from Chicago that I think will be phenomenal. I have a 6'5 center from Florida that came, and she runs like a gazelle, and I'm excited to get her out and transition and see what she can do. And then we've got our all-conference players coming back. We've got Ashley Beal and Christina Reed, who both can put the ball in the basket, point blank period. And they have taken on the challenge to recommit to the vision that I have for this program. And so with that combination of people, I've got a little bit, I call her Speedy. She's a 5-foot point guard, but Lord knows she's fast as a dickens, so she has to be at 5 feet. We're going to get it done. We're going to get it done in the way that works for us. And so I've never been into preseason predictions. I don't think I'm going to start now, but I always let people know. I said, let's just wait till March, and let's see what happens in March, and we're going to rock and roll with what that is. So that's pretty much what I would probably say at a press conference and smile the entire way, because at the end of the day, it's just on paper. It's just on paper, and being an underdog is just fine with me.
Yeah, I used to feel the same way, Coach. They would always, you know, I'm kind of at the back of the room. They would always kind of look down on me, but the very next year, it was so interesting. What I did was I went to the dollar store and I bought 8 pair of sunshades, and I handed them out to the coaches, and they were looking at me like, what are you handing me sunshades for? I said, oh, remember last year when you predicted that we would finish in last place? I'm getting ready to pull the trophy out, and I don't want the reflection to blind you guys. So that's why I gave you the sunshade. So now you take that and stick it, because you never tell us what we can't do. And when you ever you tell me I can't do something, you just watch out. And that's exactly the way it was.
We had a pretty challenging preseason schedule this year, but a very welcoming preseason schedule. You know, we open up with Talladega on the 9th here at home, go to Alabama, Tougaloo here at home. Again, that's our education day. You know, and then we've got a couple major hitters, but then we come back home again for 3 consecutive home games, December 12th, 17th, and 21st, before we go into conference play, with one of those being University of Colorado, which will be the first time a Power 5 school has stepped on Mississippi Valley State's campus and competed. So we welcome the attention. and we think we'll be just fine. And so I'm very excited that you guys, you know, picked me to do an interview. I think some great things are coming from this institution as a whole, and I can't wait to start rocking and rolling. I really can't.
I tell you, well, you're certainly welcome, Coach. You know, anytime we can get you on the show, it's going to be an honor for us. And hopefully as the season progresses, we'll be able to get you on when the season actually starts. We know how busy things get, and I definitely know how busy they get. Like I always say to every coach, it's all, you know, cold pizza and coffee now from now until the end of the season because you're going to be so busy.
You got it.
Yeah, that's just the way it. That's just the way it is. I mean, it happens that way. And but we're going to try to get you back on the show. One thing we try to do here on the Overtime Sports Show is we try to pull women's athletics to the forefront because they deserve it. Women athletes work just as hard as anybody else. And I tell you what, women athletes are really going to go professionally into something other than sports because there's not a lot of avenues out there for them to really get into the professional ranks. I mean, yeah, you can go overseas, you can do this, but let's face it, there's not a whole lot of places for them to go. So they're very good at what they do. You know, collegiate athletics, as far as women's sports concerned, it's very good. But people don't know that because nobody talks about it. And that's one thing that I want to do here on the Overtime Sports Show is bring it to the forefront because these ladies work just as hard as anybody else, and they do a great job. So thank you very much for being on the show. And like I said, we're going to try to get you on during the season. If you have a little break in the schedule and finally got a chance to relax, we'll get you on. We'll talk about how things are going. And Coach, thank you so much.
Guys, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And whenever you need me, feel free to reach out. I'll make time for you.
All right. Thank
Thanks,
you so
Coach.
Much.
Take care.
All right, that was Coach Jessica Curran, the head women's basketball coach at Mississippi Valley State University of the SWAC. And so looking for good things out of their team this year. And knowing Coach Curran and her drive and determination, they're going to do great things down there at Mississippi Valley State University. Well, we're going to have tomorrow off, but coming up on Wednesday, we're going to have a very, very important show. We're going to have a representative from the Durham County Board of Elections. Now, he's going to be coming on. His name is Gedman, Steve Gedman, I think it is. He's going to be coming on. He's going to talk about the election. Now, as you know, here on the Overtime Sports Show, from time to time we do community things such as this because, like Coach Curran was talking about, this is probably, I thought 2008 was the most important election of my lifetime. I thought that, you know, the historic value of what was going to happen in 2008 and 2012 was going to be just, you know, seismic. But let me tell you something. This election coming up in just less than, 70 days?
Yes.
Is going to be the most important election that this country has ever been through. Now, I know a lot of young people don't know this. Or haven't been through this. But I'm a 60s baby. And I'm going to tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. What is happening now is just the 60s coming back through one more time. There was a person by the name of George Wallace. I know y'all don't remember him much. But he was, you know, attempted assassination. Somebody tried to kill him up in Baltimore, whatever. But he reminds me of the times that we are in now. The same rhetoric that he was spilling then, and he was a devout racist. The same rhetoric that he is spilling then is being spilled now. Mm-hmm. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is the most important election of our generation. A loss, we're finished. A win, we're a little better off, but there's still problems, but we're better off. But a definite loss, it is a loss for the entire generation before us and a tragedy for the generation after us. So we're going to have to get in here. We're going to have to vote. We've got to turn out in those numbers of 2008 and 2012. We're going to, and in the words of Martin Luther King, we ain't going to let nobody turn us around.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to get out there. You're going to have to vote. You're going to have to make your voice known. I tell you what, I challenge, and I'm going straight after my people now. I challenge my people to line up at the polls and vote like they line up to buy a pair of Jordans at the mall.
Mm-mm.
I challenge them to go out and vote. And as many numbers as they turn out on Saturday to buy a weave to go in their head, I challenge them to vote.
Wow.
I challenge them.
You didn't say buy weave.
Yes, I did. That horse hair. Yes, I did. I challenge you to go out and vote. And if they tell you you can't vote, say why not. And do not move until they tell you why not. Mm-hmm. Contact your whoever representative is there at your voting site. The lawyers are going to, I know there's going to be tons of lawyers there. The lawyers are going to be there, everything, because it's amazing. Before Barack Obama won the presidency, you could vote if your name was Heinz Ketchup. And all of a sudden, after the jig was up, basically, and Obama won, now all of a sudden Republicans are saying, you can't vote. Why can't you vote? Because you voted for Obama. That's
and
the only
they don't
reason.
Have to show their IDs, do they, this time?
No. You don't have to show any ID at this point. You don't have to show any ID to vote. If somebody asks you for some ID, you ask
exactly.
them for theirs. Mm-hmm. You know. There is no. You don't have to show any ID to vote, period. As they try it, which they actually, there was a town in South Carolina that they actually sent the sheriff's deputies to all African-American registered voters' houses to make sure they were living at those particular addresses.
Really? Wow.
They sent the sheriff department to those houses. And here's what got me.
Really crazy.
They were saying, you can't do it just against black people. You got to do it for all people. So the sheriff said, just to be funny, okay, I'll send them to a few white people's houses. Every black person's house they went to was properly registered to vote. Every white person's house they went to was not.
Interesting.
Now, take that and put it in your pipe. When they said they were going to do drug tests for those who receive food stamps, they thought that, oh, we're going to catch a lot of black people now. They did a random screening of 22,000 tests to see how many people failed. And they had it broken down, African-American, Latino, whatever. One person failed the test. And the other group, which shall remain nameless, they did a sample of about 22,000, and approximately 8,000 failed.
Wow.
So,
interesting.
Okay. That's all I got to say. Okay. All right. Well, we will be on, like I said, Wednesday night with that, and we'll bring you information about elections because, like I said, this is so important right now. This is so important. So until Wednesday night, 6:30, right here on the Overtime Sports Show, we have Durham County Board of Elections. We're going to talk about it. Until then, goodbye, everybody.
See ya.